You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet,
and story is everything.
We're your hosts, Jim and Bobby Bell.
And we're so delighted that you're joining us. That was a Hot Texas Swing Band, courtesy of its musician-composer, Alex Dormont, and his band, the Hot Texas Swing Band, to start us off. And Jim, who do we have joining us tonight?
Who's our guest?
Who's our
Johnny
guest?
D. Boggs.
Johnny D. Boggs. Hey, Johnny.
Hi.
Johnny, where are you joining us from?
This is my office in Santa Fe, New Mexico. This is where I do all my writing.
You're kind of like a neighbor, kind of.
Yeah. Right.
Just down the road.
Yeah, just down the road. Jim, do you want to say a little something about Johnny?
We have a little bio here. Johnny was born in 1962. He grew up on a farm near Timmonsville, South Carolina. He knew he wanted to be a writer at an early age. Kids my age would want to play characters from a popular TV show or movie, like Steve McGarrett or Cool Hand Luke. I was too busy making up my own characters and playing them. I wrote my first story in the third grade and was hooked. I also started writing stories, superhero, detective stories, mostly not westerns, and selling them to my classmates for a nickel or a dime. My royalties were a lot higher then. He's a 1984 graduate of the University of South Carolina's acclaimed Journalism College. Living in Santa Fe, New Mexico now, he has earned a record 9 Spur Awards from the Western Writers of America for his fiction and received the 2020 Olin Whistler Award for Lifetime Contributions to Western Literature. And he was inducted into the Western Writers Hall of Fame. That's quite a bio, Johnny.
Yeah, and we know him.
We do.
Oh, my gosh. We are talking about Johnny D. Boggs' latest book. I'm trying to hold it up here so you can see the whole title. This is an amazing book. If you love film, if you are really interested in the newspaper world, in how the two meet across the eras of time, if you just are a film buff and you maybe want to start watching films kind of based on subject matter so you can really binge watch, you need this book. And I have to turn it to be sure I get the title exactly right. This is American Newspaper Journalists on Film, Portrayals of the Press During the Sound Era. And it is chock full of movie information. And like I said last night when we were talking to Johnny, this is so rich in depth. I think every page lists in italics film after film after film. And he gives you other information. He gives you a line from it, a plot, an important plot development, a reason why this film is made this book. And like I say, this could become your summer film guide and just pick a chapter and sit down and watch all the films in that chapter and then move on. Right, Johnny? Would that work?
That works for me. No problems here.
So this is what we're going to be talking about tonight. Jim, do you have a first question to get
started? I have a first thought. I think it took him a cast of thousands just to come up with all the information for this book.
Oh, my gosh. All right. So
what we kind of got an idea, but when did you first start writing?
Just in general.
Well, it was third grade, just like the bio says. I mean, that's when the English teacher, or the, you know, she taught everything. But this part was during the English class. She said, "Write a story, make something up." And I was like, you know, wow, I can do that. I could, you know, Mama would spank me for telling a lie, you know. But I started writing, and I have no idea what I wrote. I just remember the feeling I got. I said, "This is pretty cool. I'd like to do this." Yeah.
And then you started your career right out of school in journalism. Yes.
Yeah. I had played high school football. South Carolina is pretty much where I came from, was really baseball centric, and I was a terrible baseball player, but I liked the sport. I just couldn't play. But I started managing the team. So it was my job to call in the results of a ball game to the local paper.
Okay. Yeah.
And I started thinking about that. And then I remember a couple of times during football games, a newspaper would be covering one of the games we played, and he'd come out and talk to the coach. And I started thinking, wait a minute, so maybe this is what I ought to do, is, you know, try to become a newspaper reporter, and that way I'm making a living writing, and maybe I could write, you know, short stories or stuff like that on the side. So I majored in journalism at the University of South Carolina and got a job immediately out of college at the Dallas Times Herald in the sports department.
Yeah. And you've worked for a lot of papers over your career.
And then I did start freelancing I worked for the Dallas Times Herald until it closed, and then I went to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and worked there until 1998. And by then, I was getting kind of burned out. It wasn't quite as fun as it was when I was starting out, and we, you know, we started losing people and not replacing those people. And I think I decided, you know, can I make a living writing? Well, why don't we give it a shot? So I just left the business altogether. And I'd worked for a couple of other small newspapers when I was in college and stuff like that. So. Mm-hmm. But it was fun. I mean, it was great.
You know, you went to school in South Carolina, but you went to, your first job was in Dallas for the paper, right?
Right.
And how did you get connected? How did you find out about them, or how did they find about you?
I had two short stories published in the student literary magazine when I was in South Carolina that were Western set.
Yeah.
And I think everybody knew that this was my dream, was to go out west and write Western fiction. So I was sending out resumes all west of the Mississippi River pretty much. And one day a professor, I was going to the newspaper lab, and a professor stopped me. His name was Henry T. Price. He taught copy editing, one of the toughest classes I ever took. Everybody called him God, because when he walked into his classroom, what he said, you follow that if you wanted to pass the course.
Yeah,
but he just said, I understand you want to move out west. And I said, yes, sir. And he says, okay, he gave me a name. He says, write this guy, send him a resume and some sample of your clips. Tell him I told you to write him. And he goes, and the rest is up to you.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I don't know what kind of photos he had of this guy, what kind of stuff he could do, but I wrote the letter, and someone called me, and it was pure luck. The Dallas Times Herald at that time was hiring, they were trying to revamp their zone suburban coverage. So they were hiring a bunch of young people right out of college. They hired four sports writers, and I happened to be one of them.
Wow.
And so it worked out. So, yeah.
So you followed Horace Greeley's advice to go west, young man. Go west. Oh, my goodness. So part of the, I would imagine then, part of your inspiration behind putting this book together is also that you spent years in the newspaper world.
Right.
And you also have an interest in film.
Yes.
Yeah.
I took a number of film courses in college. And I'd always been had this interest in cinema. And it, you know, it wasn't just Western cinema. I liked the Westerns a lot, but, you know, I discovered, you know, I like musicals. I like film noirs. I like comedies. I like just about anything. It was just kind of an art form that always intrigued me.
Yeah. So, yeah. In this book, tell us a little bit about, well, first off, it was the first question that we had really was, did you watch every film?
I watched every film. Wow. Even the ones that are very hard to sit through. And some of them I'd have to go back and watch again. And when I proposed the idea to the publisher, McFarlane, I don't think I knew exactly what I was getting myself into. I knew there were a lot of newspaper movies from the 1930s on. And I was watching like four movies a day sometimes. And a lot of them were short. So, and a lot of them were really good. Yeah. And a lot of them were not so good, but they all had something to say. I mean, what I think a lot of people didn't realize is that the newspaper movie was almost a genre unto itself during the 1930s, 40s, mm-hmm. and 50s. And after the 50s, they start to tail down, just like newspapers were starting to tail down, and television was picking up. So, but, you know, you still had a few good newspaper movies. And All the President's Men, of course, 1976, that drove a number of people into the newspaper racket. I mean, this journalism school saw a dramatic increase in journalism enrollment. And I always said it really wasn't so much All the President's Men, but Cole Shack, the Nice Night Stalker. I thought, hey, that'd be a fun job to have. So I don't know. And I remember watching Call Northside 777, which is based on a true story. And James Stewart's a reporter who goes off and tries to prove that a guy who's sentenced to life in prison was innocent. And I said, man, that's what I'd like to do. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get somebody off of that. So I never did. But actually, there was a reporter at the Dallas Times Herald who actually was a Pulitzer Prize finalist for a story he did that helped prove that a guy was improperly convicted for a 50-year sentence. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was interesting for me. The chapters are, you have the chapters arranged, well, like chapters are, kind of by subject. So some chapters are by years or eras, and some chapters are by subject. And of course, after reading the first couple chapters to just get into it, I thought, oh, I'm going to go read the Westerns chapter. And then I started, I got into it, and I didn't realize that I knew about The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. That's one that even... if you're not a Westerner, you that's just, film is just so important on so many different levels.
Right.
But I really had no idea how many others had newspapers as a major part of the story, or reporters, editors, and such part of the story. So I was reading your description of a couple of Gene Autry films, and there was a picture of Gene Autry with a woman is kind of fallen onto the floor, and it's obviously a newspaper office. And I thought, what Gene Autry movie was that? So of course I had to watch it, right? But the book, I wrote down the titles of the Gene Autry films that you mentioned, and to Roy Rogers and
Roy Rogers.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I just said, you know what? I'm just putting this book down and I'm going to go watch those films. And I was up till like 3 o'clock that morning.
Then you disappeared for about a week, didn't you?
But, you know, I think it's like anything. I don't want to say binge watching, but you kind of get like, okay, I like this. I like this is about newspapers, and this is showing me, I'm looking at a film through a different lens because I'm looking at what Johnny's writing about. And to be honest with you, I just want to watch every single film in this book.
Well, some of them you might start watching, and you probably might wish you hadn't plugged that one in. I can tell you that. I mean, no one goes out to make a bad movie. No one goes out to write a bad book or a bad newspaper article.
Yeah,
but
I found three Gene Autry and the two Roy Rogers to be really actually quite captivating and fun, and also serious at the same time. I think more serious than they're given credit for, maybe today, but they were really hitting on important topics. And it didn't matter that there was a little music in there. You know, I don't mind a little music in there.
No, I don't either.
Oh, let's see. Yeah. Go ahead. You must have a good question.
We'll have a question.
I'm looking at our questions to make sure we don't miss something really good.
You know, sometimes when the movies, particularly the ones we're talking about with journalism in them as a subject matter, you know, it seemed like they started out as plays, mm-hmm. you know, and they hit Broadway first, and then they became movies later. Now, we know that somewhere around 28, 29 is when the talkies, as we call them, the sound pictures right. first started. So it seemed like there was, I don't think, a proliferation, but a lot more movies started coming out, and particularly coming out was newspapers and as a theme.
Mm-hmm. I think you wrote about the front page. Was that one
the front,
of them?
Yeah, the front page, which was written by a couple of newspaper. The play was written by a couple of newspaper people, reporters out of Chicago. And the front page, the play becomes this enormous hit. And then, you know, the talkies are starting to come out, and they filmmakers have to have dialogue all of a sudden rather than just little,
subtitles.
So they started hiring a number of newspaper reporters to be the screenwriters. And of course the front page becomes this enormous hit on as a movie. And then it proceeds on, they do a remake of it. It's probably even better than the original. It's His Girl Friday with 1940, where they changed one of the reporters to a woman who's happens to be the scheming editor's ex-wife, and he doesn't want to really give her up. And it goes on, but there were the newspapers becomes almost a genre in itself in the late 20s. Into the 30s, into the 40s, into the 50s, and that's when it starts to, you know, peter out. It just says newspapers are starting to lose a little bit of their hold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in that period, I can remember, brings back some memories of when I was younger, newspapers. You know, there was a morning newspaper and there was an evening newspaper in a lot of cities. And both of them seemed to have enough readership to keep them going. Then I noticed that as time went on, maybe the evening papers dropped the sides.
So. Right, right. When I went to the Dallas Times Herald, we were an all-day newspaper, which doesn't really mean we were publishing things all day. But we had a morning edition and we had an afternoon edition. And eventually they closed the afternoon edition because the readership started falling off. More people wanted the morning newspapers.
So is this true?
What do you ask?
Okay, so I'm sorry that I don't remember what chapter this was in, but it seemed like a lot of editors are murdered like on the spot. Like they're murdered. Like to be an editor, you would do that dangerous. Very dangerous job to be an editor. Was that something you ran into in your newspaper experience?
I never saw an editor killed. There were a couple that I wanted to kill at various times, and a couple really wanted to kill me here and there. But it, you know, especially in the West. I mean, in the West. Yeah. Newspaper, I mean, we approach newspapers a day as being unbiased. Yeah. I mean, you go into an article and you try to find the truth and stuff like that. In the frontier, I mean, newspapers were completely biased. That goes on for ways and ways and ways until finally, you know, they started demanding some ethical standards among newspapers. But it could be a dangerous job. Gunshots would be fired into a newspaper office in the frontier. And even now, I mean, it can be a fairly dangerous job when you tick off the wrong people.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I think it seemed like it was a very exciting, my sense is from the movie, from the chapters that I read about, that the movies were showing the world of the reporter, the editor, it's a very exciting world to be part of.
It was an exciting part when I was working there. I mean, there one thing is that a lot of the early newspaper movies capture really is the intensity and just this all this activity going on in the newsroom. And a lot of that was true. I mean, and a lot of that, even when we went to computers, there was still, I mean, at the Times Herald in Dallas, I mean, the sports desk, which was I was working on, was right across from the news desk. And you're trying to get the paper out. You're getting stories on deadline. There are mm-hmm. people running back and forth. You're on the phone. It was a tremendous amount of energy, and you fed off of that. I mean, you fed off mm-hmm. this energy. Yeah, it was an exciting story. And when something you know major broke, whether it was in sports, whether it was in news, I mean, you always got this feeling that you're really putting out a really good product, and you this is something people are going to read and need to read in the morning. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of great energy in the newsroom. Mm-hmm. That was one thing I think mm-hmm. the newspaper, especially the early newspaper. Now, we didn't have, you know, liquor bottles under our desk like they'd had in the 1930s. Although when the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, when I moved to, they were remodeling the composing room. And when they busted out a wall, they found all this broken glass from liquor bottles being dropped through a hole in the wall.
Before your time, uh-huh.
Before my time.
That's his story, and he's sticking to it.
It had to be pretty exciting. No, I have got the feeling that you folks spend a lot of hours in the newspaper business.
Yeah. Did you have a set schedule? You clocked in and you clocked out, or how did you manage your time?
Yeah, it was. I mean, the great thing about working for a morning newspaper on the copy desk is that you didn't have to go into work until 4 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe 3 o'clock in the afternoon, sometimes a little earlier, and you're working up to 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. get the last editions out. If you're a reporter, if you're on news side, I mean business. Features usually cleared out pretty early because they're working pretty much 9 to 5. News desk would be in cycles and things like that. And if you had a morning afternoon paper, you'd have a couple of people working on the afternoon shifts. There was an article recently in the New York Times, and it was like, you know, what would a newspaper movie look like today? Because you don't have that energy. The staffs have been cut down. A lot of people are working out of home now. And the writer of the article was kind of lamenting the fact that she missed all this energy that you got from working with someone standing over your shoulder while you're editing a story. That happened, especially on a big story. You've got the editors looking at you and you're just, okay. What do you want? No, to change this word to this and this and that and blah, blah, blah. It was just a tremendous, especially when you're young.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I was working there from 22 to in my early 30s or mid 30s. And it was just an exciting time to be in newspapers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We're talking with our guest, Johnny D. Boggs. He's joined us from his home in Santa Fe. And we're talking about this wonderful, wonderful book, American Newspaper Journalists on Film, Portrayals of the Press During the Sound Era. We're going to take a very brief and short break and let you see a little bit about West Shop's bookshop.org page where this book is available. And we'll be back to talk more with Johnny in just a moment. Don't touch me. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest tonight, Johnny D. Boggs.
And we're talking about American Newspaper Journalists on Film. Johnny, this is just so delightful to be sitting here chatting with you. It's really fun. The chapters, I thought maybe we should just, it's like there's a chapter on sports writers.
Sure.
what would a reader expect you to, what did you cover in that chapter on sports writers?
Just how sports writers are played. I mean, I think the people think sports writers are going to think Oscar from The Odd Couple. They were some slobs that we worked with, but they were preppy people. They were not all of this slob. And this, but Oscar Madison becomes the prototypical sports writer as this big Walter Matthau slob.
Yeah, he does.
But, you know, and one of my favorite newspaper movies is Deadline USA, which is Humphrey Bogart, 1952, as the managing editor of a newspaper that's just been bought and is going to be shut down by the competition, which is exactly what happened at the Dallas Times Herald. Sure, so it has I have that personal connection to it. But I always thought one of the things they want to go out with the paper with a bang and have a really good story, and they're trying to get this racketeer for all of his crimes. And they send the sports writer or the sports editor or sports columnist, not exactly clear who he is, to bring in the guy that can do it. And I said, all right, the sports writer is finally a hero.
Let's see. Oh, the newspaper photographer.
Photographers got a pretty rough. They're usually just they give them, you know, the nicknames. There's Flash or Snapshot or, you know, things like that. So they're often just kind of a minor character and stuff. And sometimes they're real sleazeballs. And one of the interesting movies from the 1930s is The Picture Snatcher, which James Cagney is a thug who goes into the newspaper journalist and become a picture snatcher. And it has two meanings. A, he's supposed to go into the homes and grab a photo and steal the photo so they can reproduce it in the newspaper of some scandalous story. Yeah. And he also is a picture snatcher. He's taking photos. And one of the scenes that he does, he pretends to be a newspaper reporter covering an execution. And he goes in with a camera strapped to his ankle. And right before they pull the switch, he's raising his little pants leg and he has a wire. So he just has to hit a button and takes a photo. And you think, oh, that's just a ridiculous Hollywood theme or idea. It actually happened in New York in the 1920s, early 1930s. They covered the photographer went in. He had to wear and they ran it on the front page of a New York tabloid. And it was one of the best-selling newspapers history. Most of the photographers I worked with did not do anything like that. They were really reputable and very good photographers.
They didn't have cameras in their eyeglasses, things like that, you know?
They always have the hidden cameras and stuff like that, and most of them. I never saw a newspaper photographer work with that. He had a 35mm Nikon usually.
Let's see, war correspondents.
I wanted to get to really serious subjects on that, and they were often portrayed a lot of times fairly accurate in some of the movies. Well, I think one of the best World War II movies ever made, and one of the best movies ever made actually, is the story of G.I. Joe, which is Robert Mitchum as a company commander. But Burgess Meredith plays Ernie Pyle from Albuquerque. Yeah, he lived in Albuquerque, who was a great legendary Pulitzer Prize winning newspaper correspondent during World War II, and wrote some of the most beautiful descriptions of soldiers and stuff. And I just wanted to really give Ernie Pyle his due. And Burgess Meredith does a great performance of that. It's just a fabulous movie. And I remember when I was working at a small newspaper in Florence, South Carolina, the Florence Morning News, we were doing a Christmas story or something like that. So they had me go to what we call the morgue, which is all the back issues. And I was going through and I found an article about three area soldiers who were interviewed by Ernie Pyle. And I went to the phone books and I looked up and I found one of the names in one of the phone books, and I called him up and I asked him, and it was him. And he's, I remember. And the great thing, one of the things I never really liked about a lot of newspaper movies is you never see the guy, reporters, taking notes.
Uh-huh.
So, I always had a reporter's pad in my pocket, and I was taking notes and stuff. And sometimes I couldn't read my writing. But I asked him, and he said the most amazing thing about what I remember most about Ernie Pyle was we're freezing our butts off. He comes into the tents. He's freezing with us. He asks us all those questions. He doesn't take a single note. And he quotes us verbatim.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
I'm not Ernie Pyle. I can't do that. But yeah, that was a wonderful story.
You know, he was really famous. But, you know, didn't he unfortunately die almost a week
ago? He was killed covering the Okinawa campaign. And that was one of the sad things about that is he's killed before the movie comes out. So he never got to see the movie come out in 1945.
You do have the chapter Newspapers and Westerns, and I know we touched on that briefly. Is there it's a really, to me, a such an interesting chapter. Is there anything that you'd want to add?
There is a kind of a B 1950s Randolph Scott movie called Fort Worth. Randolph Scott is the guy who's coming to Fort Worth. He used to be a gunman, but he's decided that the pen is mightier than the six shooter. And of course, it doesn't turn out that way because it's a Randolph Scott Western. He's going to have to pack a gun at some point. But it does. There was an intense rivalry between Dallas and Fort Worth, and they do play up some of that in the movie. So the screenwriters did do a little bit of research, not a whole lot, but a little bit. So it's kind of worth watching sometimes if you like newspapers and you like Randolph Scott. And who doesn't like Randolph Scott?
Of course. And of course, when you begin to watch a number in a row, you'll see, and it may just be based kind of on what was the decade or the time, but you get that twirly newspaper, you know, you get the close up of that front page headline and then it sort of turns around and, you know, flies away. I don't know that that exists through all the movie newsroom dramas, but certainly it seemed to be in a lot of the ones I was watching from the earlier decades, I guess, to just really help us know for sure what's going on.
Right. Show the headlines and things
newspaper
like that.
Paper readers, right. Is there anything, and please talk about Newspaper Women. That's a fascinating chapter. I want to watch every film that's in that chapter.
Yeah, there were a number of actresses. I mean, there was a Torchy Blaine series from the 1930s, which had a few actresses playing Torchy over its run. But, you know, she's the reporter who's dating the police lieutenant, and she's helping him solve the crimes. And actually, she always solves the crime, but she also gets into trouble here and there.
That's like a Hallmark movie.
Yeah.
All those women that are have bakeries, but they're out solving murders and they're helping the detective who doesn't seem to know what to do, but the baker knows what to do.
So there were a number of you know, Claire Trevor, who made a number of movies. She made a number of newspaper roles. And Glenda Farrell, who's one of the actresses who played Torchy Blaine, Joan Blondell. She made a number of newspaper movies, and a lot of them are, you know, especially in the 1930s. I mean, they're pretty aggressive. I mean, they get in the trenches. And the one, there was a movie, Joan Blondell's in a movie called the famous Ferguson case. It was based on a true story about a murder, and she comes in and she's from the mutt raking journalism with hardly any ethics, but she kind of, you know, backs up and decides that, you know, this is not the kind of stories I need to be writing, kind of things. I'd really like to get to be an honest journalist for once.
And they don't want to be called sob sisters.
No, sob sisters, and that's what a number of newspaper women reporters were called, were sob sisters, because they're writing these stories that are supposed to make the readers cry, and a lot of reporters, female reporters, did not want to be called a sob sister.
That's where that term came from.
That's where the term came from. Someone
is
actually
that right?
Visited. Yeah. So that's where it came from a newspaper column.
I heard the term before, but I forgot. You know, it's been years since I heard that term, but that's where it's from.
Well, it's like women in the West that didn't want to be considered damsels in distress or Madonnas of the Prairie. I mean, these are, you know, they're hardworking ranchers. I mean, they're like, don't be making me soft. I'm tough. I'm, you know, I'm doing the thing. I'm tough. Oh my goodness. Was there anything as you did your watching of the movies and you began to kind of compile in your mind how you would tell the stories, these stories, was there anything that surprised you? Was there something you were, you know, that would expect to discover, anything like that?
There were some movies that actually surprised me. I mean, there were some movies. I mean, especially during the 30s and early into the 40s, there were some movies that I thought would be just, you know, routine programmers, not a whole lot of interest there, but they turned out to be pretty fun movies. And a lot of times I think they got the newspaper reporters absolutely right. And some of them, you know, some of them, there's one where a scheming newspaper reporter is trying to get the jury verdict. So he's got a telescope looking into the jury room from across the street, and he's hired a guy. I hired a guy to read the lips, so he can figure out. He can break the story with what the verdict is.
Oh my gosh!
I never saw that happen. I never saw that happen in real life, but it's a fun scene. It's called The Crusader. It's from 1930s, okay. And it's The Crusader is the actor is playing the crusading new district attorney or something like that. But there's Roscoe Carnes, I believe, plays the reporter, and he made a number of movies. Yeah. He played a number of reporters or photographers and stuff like that.
Yes, he did. I remember.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When TV came into the newsroom, how did that have an impact? And if so, what was that impact? And does it show up in the newspaper movies?
There was a newspapers. First of all, radio was going to be the big competition, mm-hmm. and it was in a lot of ways. But the idea was that. Radio can't really go into the in-depth coverage that you can get in newspaper. And when TV came out, that's what they were thinking was that you can't really beat us, but they can because they can do it instantly. There's a movie called 30. 30 is a hyphen, 30 hyphen, and that's what reporters generally, and I still do it, put on the end of the stories. That makes this marks the end of the story. Mm-hmm. So there was a movie called 30 with Jack Webb playing the one of the assistant managing editors, and it's all set entirely in a news, pretty much entirely in a newsroom, for putting out the newspaper for the eight hour shift until they have to go to press. And Jack Webb, but there's a scene where they're trying to break this story, and William Conrad, who later becomes Frank Cannon, he's mm-hmm. playing the assistant or night city editor, and he's trying to get the story. And all of a sudden, they look up onto the TV. Mm-hmm. And we had TVs in our newsrooms. I mean, we would look up and things like that. And he looks up and their TV is breaking the story. And William Conrad's character goes, why? Why didn't we all band together and crush television when we still had a chance?
And now are they saying, why did we band together and crush the internet when we had a chance?
Right. Yeah, that's all too sadly true. Yeah.
Off the top of your head, are there a couple other titles that just you would say, oh, you've got to see this one? Any other?
Yeah, from the 30s, I think Five Star Final, which is a Warner Brothers movie with Edward G. Robinson as a publisher, and Boris Karloff plays a sleazebag reporter, and it's a really I mean, it shows the downside of tabloid journalism, how ruthless it could be and how terrible it could be. I mean, newspapers occasionally need to be, you know, called out for mm-hmm. doing stuff improper, and that's one of the fine, you could call it an anti-newspaper movie, but it's really just anti-tabloid journalism movie. Mm-hmm. And it's from the 1930s. The 1940s, I think, called Northside 777 with James Stewart, of course, mm-hmm. I've already mentioned, is a wonderful, wonderful movie. And again, from the 1950s, Deadline USA with Humphrey Bogart as the managing editor. The managing editor I always wanted to work for. From the 60s, you're starting to see a little bit of a tail dive. But The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, I'm going to call that a newspaper movie and put it in a Western.
Yep.
The 70s, I would say All the President's Men. The 80s, maybe not a whole lot there. But Lou Grant was on television by the way.
Yeah, it was.
The 90s, there's a movie called The Paper. And it's kind of ridiculous in a lot of ways. But it does capture the energy and the emotions running into a newsroom, how dedicated reporters can be to go to it. And in 2000, I think Spotlight's an absolutely fabulous movie, fabulous movie, and one that just came out that didn't make the book, but I think it's worthy of mention. Is She Said, which is about the New York Times investigation of the Weinstein sexual scandals. So
you'll be keeping notes on all the new ones coming out, and in like 10 years, we'll have a second edition.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how many newspaper movies they keep producing. They occasionally, the good thing is that I won't have to watch as many movies.
We're chatting with our guest, Johnny D. Boggs. And again, I'm going to hold up the book one more time. And we're not done talking, but I'm going to hold up this book one more time. The American Newspaper Journalist on Film. And it's really dealing with the sound era, even though early in the book, Johnny does mention that there were some films in the silent era, including one by William S. Hart that did deal with newspapers. But he's focusing totally on the sound era. We want to shift gears for just a moment and talk to you a little bit about your writing process. We've been talking about Westerns. You did mention earlier, you wanted to go West. You wanted to write Westerns. We only have a couple in our Bell library here at home, but we pulled them out. Return to Red River is one of them. Yeah. I know I have a second one here. Northfield is another one. And I would like to say that we had a whole shelf of Johnny D. Boggs novels, but we're working on it. We see, I think, where you write, but when do you write and how do you organize your time for writing?
It depends on what all I have to do. I mean, I do a number of magazine articles here and there. So I know what I have to do. So, but it's a job. I mean, I get up in the morning, I shower, I have a smoothie, I have try to get some local honey over a tortilla to combat the allergies. And then I grab a cup of coffee and I come into the office or I'm doing something. I edit Western Writers of America's Roundup magazine. So I have to spend some time doing that. And then I see what I have on my agenda, what I have to do, what deadlines. I don't want the editor screaming at me. So then I'm writing, and then it's a job. I mean, I just say it's my commute's shorter than a lot of people, but it is a job. And I'm working a lot.
As a writer, which we've heard this from other writers, you're really kind of solitary. I mean, you're working on your projects. So do you get out much?
I walk the dog. I mean, I walk the dog. I get up. I intentionally keep the Western Writers of America laptop outside of the office. And that's so I have to get up and go check that email. So I'm getting my steps in. And then I'm also going back to the coffee pot in the kitchen and refilling my cup and stuff like that. And, sometimes if I've got a magazine story or something like that, I'll have to go out to, do an interview. And sometimes that takes me out of state, for some of the true West or Wild West articles. So it all varies and it all depends on what my deadline is and what I know that I need to get out next.
You know, we have a question we sometimes ask, what was the best investment that you made in your literary career that you could think of?
The best investment?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. The best investment. Yeah. Hmm. well, it might not really be an investment. But when I left the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, I gave notice. And the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, when I started the job, they advanced me a salary, a week's salary. And I thought, well, wow, that's our 2 weeks salary or something like that. I said, wow, that's kind of nice. Okay. I mean, I didn't ask for it. Yeah. I didn't. When I left the Star-Telegram and I gave notice, they informed me that they take out the advance, that they advance you. Yeah. But it's not what you were making then. Uh-huh. It's what you're making now.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, wait a minute. I'm making a significant amount more money now as assistant sports editor in charge of the night of operation than I was when I hired on as a copy editor. I said, yes, well, that's the way it is.
Oh.
So I said, okay, so people argue about it, but we always win. So you're stuck with that. So I said, okay, all right. And for the next couple of weeks, I just filled my briefcase with ink pens, with reporter pads, notepads. I said, I'm getting my money's worth. I didn't spend any money, but it cost me a lot more money than I think I walked out with.
Oh, my gosh. Johnny, where can people find you, and where can they find your books?
Well, it depends on what they're looking for. I'm in the phone book, and the website is Johnny D. Boggs, www.johnnydboggs.com, and it has links on all the books. So you can get and it has links to this book, and you can find out whatever you can go. I always say, you can find the title you like, and go to your local bookstore, your independent bookstore, and. And go to your local library.
Yes.
I mean, I love libraries.
Yes, yes, yes.
And you can find a lot of books there. And then if you have to, you can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Yes. Well, this has really been fun. We've been chatting one more time. We're going to hold up this current book, American Newspaper Journalists on Film, with our special guest, Johnny D. Boggs. Don't go away, Johnny. We are going to wrap the show, but please stay on the screen with us. Our next week guest is Linda Strader, and we'll be talking about her books, Summers of Fire, and her other book, Uprooted. And so Jim and I'll start reading these tonight. So we're ready for no movies to watch, though, I don't think. And Jim, you have a couple quotes?
We do. We like to have a couple quotes at the end of the show, and we try to tie in the story we're talking about, plus maybe one from the outside world. I got three tonight. We like one from the movie, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. When the legend becomes fact, print the legend. Mm-hmm. And from the 1946 movie, Home in Oklahoma. Roy Rogers says to Dale Evans, "You don't believe in ethics, do you?" And Dale replies, "I'm a newspaper woman. I print stories while they're hot."
City editor, newspaper woman, Roy and Dale, you got to love them.
And then we have one from the comedian Jerry Seinfeld. It's amazing that the amount of news that happens in the world every day always just exactly fits the newspaper.
Oh, Johnny, it's been great to spend this evening with you.
Thank you so much.
We look forward
to coming up to Santa Fe and
having a cup of coffee.
Well, on behalf of Jim and me and Sam Haston of LA Talk Radio, till we meet again.
Remember,
it's always a great day out west. See you next week.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thank y'all.
You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.